Oh my god, what?
I don't know what just happened. I think we experienced a rift in the time-space continuum.
This fucking guy.
Hi! So, apparently, yeah, Nick was like, he said, quote, "I've got to be honest with you, listening to this podcast, my biggest takeaway and or thought process I'm having is that I really miss doing crazy and stupid wild shit."
That should not be his takeaway. I disagree.
I said, that's your biggest takeaway?
I disagree hardcore with that assessment.
He then said, yeah, you guys are making me nostalgic for doing crazy things. Crying face, laugh emoji. I mean, you both kind of make these crazy dudes sound kind of badass. And I was like, I really need you to not want to do crazy things.
Yeah.
Considering you're the partner I've chosen to live my life with.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, Carmen's dude was cool. My dude was a total piece of shit.
Yeah.
Please don't aspire to ride bears into dinner parties or light people on fire or do any equine-based pranks.
No. Are you watching, this is a total shout out, but are you watching The Righteous Gemstones on HBO?
Fuck yeah, we are.
Don't play car pranks.
It's so stupid.
They're just the people I play car pranks with. That shit is so great. Shout out to our four listeners out there. If you're not watching The Righteous Gemstones, get right with your life.
Ugh. This episode is sponsored by HBO.
It's sponsored by HBO and our four listeners. Yeah!
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, guys. You're really making dreams come true. Except not yes. HBO.
Not really, yeah. But if you want to give us a show to write for you, that would be dope.
We would be down with that. And if you want to involve recent Emmy winner Phoebe Waller-Bridge, we would not be upset with that.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to switch over to Amazon, though. She just inked that $20 million deal.
Oh, get that money. Get your paper.
Yeah, this is recommendation hour.
Recommendation corner.
If you haven't watched Fleabag.
Ugh, what are you even doing with your life?
Stop listening to this podcast right now. Come back to it later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is not as important as
it's not. Go watch two seasons of Fleabag and then come back and listen to us and then email us how you feel.
Yeah. Email us at our email.
It's in the podcast description below.
That's right.
I'm pointing like I'm a YouTuber for some reason.
Caitlin's pointing down as if there is a fictitious box in which you can subscribe. There's no subscribe box.
There's a subscribe button for on your podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast.
But they can't see you.
Sure. Or can they?
I hope not.
I know, I hope not. Surprise, we have a YouTube channel.
I didn't know we were live streamers. Is that a thing? Is that what they call them?
Sure. I just post the terrible videos of us Skyping each other. With all the lags. I don't even...
Oh, God. These can't ever see the light of day.
No.
The audio surviving is like a touch too much.
Yeah, I'm honestly shocked that this is working and that it doesn't sound like hot trash. Welcome to this fucking guy.
Hey, this is a podcast. We're semi-professionals.
Sure.
Cue music?
Oh, yeah, cue music.
Boop a doop a doop boop. Ching.
I'm Caitlin Corsetti.
I'm Carmen Harbour. We're going to tell you about some weird, wacky stories from history.
Yeah. I am very excited because we did launch our first episode today. We're on the line.
We are so on the line.
Hopefully by the time this episode gets posted on the line, the Apple overlords will have approved us to be in Apple feed. Even though I'm not the biggest fan of the Apple podcast app.
Same.
However, it does allow us to get seen by a lot more people, and like you guys can go on and review, which if you're not leaving 5-star reviews, then
you don't love us.
Yeah, you don't love us, and I'm writing you out of the will. So
And also the podcast, Apple Podcasts app, allows us to go directly into your ear holes.
Yeah, right. Just right up in your ear holes. You don't
all up in them.
You can upload a separate app. But for now, you can find us on Spotify. And you can listen there. We're also going to be on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and some other ones. We're just waiting for all the approvals to go through. So do that.
And we'll also be touring with Bruce Springsteen this fall.
Oh, yeah. It's casual. We didn't really want to, like, brag about it.
We didn't really want to drop that right off the bat. Just roll cash. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's not going to go to our heads.
No, not at all. Just straight into our jeans.
Yeah, we're going to just be super humble about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
About all of our podcast platforms and our upcoming tour.
Yes. And you can also click all of our links and follow us on social and start getting connected with us. We would love that.
Yeah. Connect with us.
Oh.
Yeah. Do it. You should do it.
You just have to do it in the words of time.
It's something to do. And I think that probably something we should just do.
As our podcast?
As our thing.
Our show. So you went first last week, so you want me to go first?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that, because I still feel bad about making you cry.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't listened to episode 2, where Carmen makes me cry for about 20 minutes, go do that.
I still feel bad about that.
Don't feel bad. It was worth it. It was worth it. And then I cried again because when Nick got home, I was showing him pictures of Sergeant Stubbs. And so I just cried all over again.
Yeah, no, I got it. I totally did the same thing to Kyle. After the podcast, I told him Sergeant Stubby's stories, and then it was just like, he's an American hero. Oh my God.
And don't forget, we found out that the Sergeant Stubbs animated film is available on HBO.
Yes, so get on that HBO Go. Get on that HBO now. Watch the Sergeant Stubby movie and tell us about it, because we're never going to watch it.
Yeah, because our little hearts are not capable of handling that much cuteness.
No, I'm not ready to be emotionally devastated for several days, so I'm just never going to watch that. If there's an animal in a movie, not going to watch it.
Like, I cry over those Subaru commercials with the golden retriever.
Don't do this. Don't you do this.
This is now a dog podcast.
Oh, don't you talk about that goddamn commercial where he grows old.
I know, and then he picks up the puppy.
I can't. Oh, okay. Ooh. I know. All right, moving on.
Payback, bitch.
So upset right now.
Oh my God, she's literally crying.
I'm really upset. Okay.
This is why it takes us so long to do anything as friends.
We can't do anything. We have a lot of feelings.
So many feelings.
Oh.
All right. Woo. You good, babe?
Yeah, let's do it.
We're
going to do it.
Okay, so today, I'm very excited to share with you the fascinating tale and deliciously scandalous sexcapades of King Edward VII.
Oh, yes, because I have a sexcapade candidate, too, on my end.
Shut up.
Stars align.
You guys, we don't talk about what we're doing beforehand.
No.
So This is awesome.
That's we got two sexy time stories for you.
Sexy stories. Ooh. Really putting the fuck in this fucking guy.
Yes. Yes. My name is Carmen and I endorse this pun.
Okay, so most people, when you think about crazy British monarchs, you probably go straight to, King Henry VIII for beheading all of his wives, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that wasn't cool.
No, that wasn't cool. And maybe I'll cover him, because he was also bonkers.
He invented divorce so he could, fuck other ladies.
Yeah. Well, King Edward VII didn't need divorce because he was fucking everybody.
Yes, give it to us, Edward.
So Edward was also known as Eddie, and he didn't murder anyone like King Henry VIII. He was just really horny, and people called him Dirty Birdie. I love this guy already. As a king, he was called Dirty Birdie, and then later the Uncle of England, which, because he was so beloved.
He was because he didn't make babies everywhere?
Well, that too. We'll get to it. I also don't really know how Birdie, and it's Birdie B-E-R-T-I-E, how that was a nickname for Edward. It's old nicknames like this, how Dick is from Richard, where I just assume it's because there was some guy named Richard who was a dick, and they were that's right. The nickname, you know? These just don't make any sense. Anyway, so we're going to refer to him as Edward and Birdie throughout this story. So Prince Edward was born on November 9th, 1841 at Buckingham Palace, because that's where all the royals are born, to Queen Victoria and Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha.
Whoa.
Okay. He was their eldest son, so he automatically became the Duke of Cornwall and the Duke of Rothesay right out of the womb. Just popped out. Oof. And he was a duke of two different places. And then he also had the title of Prince of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha and Duke of Saxony.
So just making money day one.
Yeah, so that's those royals for you. And of course there are impeccable records of all of this because it's the royals. They had his time of birth, I think it was 1032 or something. So then throughout his early life, from 1841 to 1867, he also assumed the titles of Prince of Wales, Earl of Chester, Earl of Dublin, Knight of the Garter, and Knight of the Thistle. I don't know what any of those mean, but I was he's the Khaleesi of his time. Just racking up titles.
So many announcements.
Such a long introduction.
Oh, he's just earling over stuff. Can earl be used as a verb?
Sure. Yeah, it can now.
Okay. I like it. There's earling over shit.
Earling and duking all just over.
Earlin in the morning, Dukin in the evening.
Yep, that's just how Prince Edward did it, you know? So, apparently he was, a fun kid, but the Queen and Prince Albert, they were look, you've got to get some education. You need to learn some shit because you're going to become king one day. So, get your ass together. He was described as informed, yes, intelligent, and of sweet manner, which I think is just code for being a big old dum-dum.
Yeah, that's how I would describe my dog.
Yeah, just
big old sweet angel.
Yep, but he didn't like learning, and we'll get a little more into it, but he... it didn't take. Every tutor, they were we can't. This kid, bless his heart, kind of a situation. But then somehow before I get to this, his sister was smart as hell, and so he was constantly being compared to her. Like, you're going to be the fucking king. Your sister, a woman, is smarter than you. Get your shit together. So,
just yet another instance of a mediocre white dude standing in front of a much more highly qualified woman.
It's true. It's true. Since forever. So he eventually goes on to study chemistry at the University of Edinburgh. Edinburgh.
That sounds like danger.
It sounds like danger. It sounds like he was like, I'm just going to mix stuff together and blow shit up. Or on the flip side, it was like potions class, which is cool. If somebody had explained chemistry to me in terms of potions and like Harry Potter, I would have not failed.
Yeah, that was not good at that. I did not understand it. I was like, how can you move molecules?
I don't get
They're there.
Our brain spaces are more like about the words.
Yeah, so. I'm not, that was not my strong suit at all.
Nope. And I don't think it was Birdie's either, but he went to college for it. So then later he enrolled at Christ Church in Oxford. And at this point, he actually started to like class because he was, hi, Jovan.
Oh, God. German Shepherd attack.
Hi, Jovan.
Bubble break.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Jovan just smacked Carmen in the face.
Yeah, this is how I end up getting punched in the ear.
Oh, yeah. Hi, big boy.
Thank you. Also sweet. Continue.
Okay. So he actually liked learning and going to lectures at this point because now his parents weren't like telling him he had to learn. He was just like in class and like studying things that actually interested him, which, you know, if you've been to college, like you probably know what that feels like. You're no longer forced to study what everyone wants you to study. Then he transferred to Trinity College in Cambridge in 1861 and studied history with Charles Kingsley, who was like a big ass deal and was like one of the most famous history professors and like did a bunch of stuff with like labor unions and like, I don't know, I'm not going to get into that, but he actually started learning some useful information about history and like how to be a ruling monarch, which is pretty
good. Cool. On you, Birdie.
But he wasn't doing as well as his parents wanted him to. So his dad, Albert, was like, no, you're going to join the army. You need to learn some discipline. And Edward's like, joke's on you, Dad. I love being in the army, because he was fucking everything while he was in the army. So...
yes.
Yeah, he...
yeah, that was absurd. Yeah, that was cool. That was real cool. It just, like, smashed into my computer and then ran away.
Bye, Mom.
Dogs are weird. He just got real hype.
He just was really excited about all the sex.
So much. So much military sex.
Yeah. Okay. So he was at an army camp in Ireland, and a bunch of his officer buddies smuggled in an actress named Nellie Clifton, and she stayed with him for 3 nights, just like 3 night long bone fest.
Just all up in the bone zone.
Yeah. And then throughout this like time that he was in Ireland, he was like going out, like partying, like fucking everybody. And Albert found out, his dad found out, and writes to him, quote, I knew that you were thoughtless and weak, but I could not think you depraved.
Oh, damn.
Imagine getting that letter from your father.
Your daddy knows where your dick been. Ooh. That is savage.
I know. It gets worse. So then Albert also went to the camp, despite being severely ill, to, like, yell at him in front of people. And then he died 2 weeks later in December 1861. And Queen Victoria, it escalated. Queen Victoria blamed Edward for Albert's death and apparently wrote to her eldest daughter, "I never can or shall look at him without a shudder."
God, okay, so all your dicking around made your dad so mad that he dies and you're now king. Go!
Yep. Yep. Well, he's wow. He's kind of king. He's not quite king yet because Queen Victoria is still, like, kicking it. But at this point, yeah, he had to get his shit together because Queen Victoria was so depressed that she refused to go out in public. So she then sends him on a tour of the Middle East. She's like, get the fuck out of England. I can't have you here.
Go away from me.
You and your dick, get out. So he goes and does this, like, massive tour of the Middle East. And finally, when he comes back to England, arrangements are made for him to be engaged and then later married to Alexandra of Denmark. They got married in March 1863, which in itself, this was, like, a huge scandal because Queen Victoria had German roots and Denmark and Germany were, like, fighting at the time. So their marriage was, like, scandalous from the get-go. And their marriage didn't even matter because he didn't fucking care. And he was like, I'm still going to fuck every single person I can.
Cool, 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 cool.
Yep. So his mistresses include actress Lily Langtry, Lady Randolph Churchill, who was Winston Churchill's mom.
Oh, damn. I was so, not expecting that.
I know. Yeah, I know. I know. So, like, the current Queen of England, this is her, like, great-great or great-grandfather or something. Or I don't know. Right? Whatever. They're related. And he fucked Winston Churchill's mom.
Damn, Winston Churchill's mom was boning down. Get it, girl. Get that dick.
So he also had relations with Daisy Greville, the Countess of Warwick, an actress named Sarah Bernhardt, Lady Susan Van Tempest, which is a badass name.
I love that name.
Yes, a singer, Hortense Schneider. Yes, a sex worker named Julia Benenni, who was, like, a very fancy, upscale sex worker at the time. Like, everybody wanted to bone her. A humanitarian named Agnes Kaiser and Alice Keppel, who Alice was, at the time of his death, the only one of his mistresses that was, like, allowed to go onto his deathbed and say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she was a cool lady.
It's reported that he had at least 55 affairs, and that doesn't include, like, all of the one-night stands and, like, one-off relations that he had.
That just makes me tired.
Tired and, like, it's gross.
Yeah. And,
like, think of the STDs.
Like, they didn't even have antibiotics.
They didn't have antibiotics or, like, condoms or birth control
or, like, sanitation.
Yeah, no, like, wet wipes.
Yeah, that's just distressing.
Yeah, yeah. So he also, because of all of this, had, like, a ton of illegitimate children. Like, they don't even know how many illegitimate children he had because they weren't really documented, and, like, he was just boning everybody, so you might be related to Prince Edward.
I feel like we all are.
He's like the Jesus of 19th century England.
You get some, you get some, you get some. So did his dick end up killing him? Because I feel like we're just on a course for, like, STDs on STDs on STDs. Just, like, straight stacking them.
Shockingly, no.
Wow.
I know. You would think he would have died from, like, gonorrhea and syphilis and, like, gotten all the diseases.
Just nope. So many.
There's actually, I don't think, any record of him having an STD, but I don't know if at the time they knew what that was.
Interesting.
So, unclear. I would wager that he had some kind of something.
Yeah, there was some gunk going on.
There was...
There was some leakage, or, you know, there were some things coming to visit once a month. You know, something was happening.
Ew. This also is like the time. Yeah, this is also like the time that, like, if you had some kind of issue, they're like, I'll just slice you open and bloodlet you or throw some leeches on it. So, yeah, he probably had leeches, like, all over his dick.
Yes. Oh, my God. He was a Gendry.
Oh, sweet baby Gendry.
Sweet baby Gendry.
I miss that. Sweet, sweet angel. Okay, so one of the best things about this fucking guy is in 1864, he decides to go back to Paris and hang out at the most famous luxurious brothel in France, Les Chabanais.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how you say it.
Sure.
You could probably say it. I can't say it.
It sounds great.
At this brothel, he bathed in champagne and swan-necked baths with sex workers. He partied his face off. He boned everything that was there. And something really, truly amazing happened at this brothel.
Do tell.
Our sweet dirty birdie was bestowed with his most favorite piece of furniture, the Siege d'Amour, or the love seat, because our boy Edward was thick and he did not like to do a lot of work during sex, so he had a chair specifically made to handle his weight during threesomes.
Okay.
And I'm going to show you a photo.
Please, I need a visual.
So this chair is on display at some museum in Scotland.
So Dirty Birdie was thick and juicy.
Thick and juicy. So...
he wasn't like a hot prince running around boning down. He was a large and in charge fellow.
He was. And we'll talk a little more about that because it comes into play later. This is the chair.
Wow.
I think he would like maybe lay down. I don't quite understand. There are some diagrams. If you look up this chair, and we'll post links, but there are some diagrams that show how this could be used.
Yeah,
but
there's a stirrup-like object.
Uh-huh. It's feet. Very ornate and looks highly uncomfortable.
It's very ornate, and it looks like there are cup holders on it.
There might have been. For champagne, probably.
That is a very complicated piece of furniture.
It is a contraption, for sure. So, yeah, there are, like, several stirrup-like things, and looks like it's, like, metal and porcelain. Does not... It's, like, gold leaf on the sides. Like, it's crazy.
There's not really a back to it, either. So I'm wondering where you're getting your, like... where he was getting his support.
I think he would like lay down, and so maybe there was like one lady on top of him and then one on the other end. I'm not quite sure the mechanics of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I've never used a love seat sex chair, so I can't tell you.
No, this is new information to me.
This is brand new information.
This is brand new information to me that these even exist.
Yeah. That was the thing. And then, all right. So that was like his time at the brothel. He had a grand old time. He loved it. But he had to get back and be king. of England. So Queen Victoria died in early 1901, which he became acting king, but his coronation didn't happen until a year later. And then at his coronation, he had a pew reserved for the king's special ladies.
Oh, so if that's not a band name, I don't know what is.
It is now. That's our punk pop band.
The King's Special Ladies.
So there, I imagine there, I think there were like several of like five or six of them that had to sit in this row together.
God damn. That's so also, baller.
Also, his wife is like still hey. There. Still hey, there. Y'all. Apparently she didn't care. She was like, whatever. Like, I can't deal with you. I just wanted to be a royal.
Yeah, she was probably getting some strange herself.
Yeah, she probably had some, like, hot, like, British, like, assistant type, you know?
Yeah, I'm picturing, like, a those, Benedict like, Cumberbatch type.
Yes, with one of those, like, billowy white shirts.
Oh, it's so silky. It's got so many ruffles. So
silky and some, like, breeches with boots.
Oh, you know that he had britches. You know that there was a bow in his little ponytail.
Yeah, a little baby ponytail with a nice ribbon in it.
You know it. Ooh, yep. Get it, girl.
So Edward continued his sexcapades.
Yes, sure. Yeah, that was close.
His sexcapades. And I'm not going to get into like all the politics and serious stuff that he did as king, because this is not that podcast.
We don't give a shit.
I don't care about that. But Bertie was not only a sex machine, he also was a trendsetter.
Yes. Did the sex chairs get popular?
They did not get popular. I think the sex chairs were only like a kind of recent discovery, because somebody like uncovered it in this brothel and they were like, what the fuck is this? But people copied his fashion choices like left and right. So he's the reason that during this time, pants were pressed side to side instead of front to back. So you know, they're like men's pants have the seam, like they're pressed to pleat. So they were the other way during this time, because that's how he liked his pants to be worn. So people just copied it. He's the reason that tweed became a popular fabric, because he liked it so much. So like he had all these tweed jackets and like overcoats, and so that became a thing.
That's so very British too.
Yes, so British. He also started the trend of wearing black ties with dinner jackets instead of the classic white tie with tails.
Ooh.
He's basically the reason for like the modern tuxedo.
Get it, Dirty Birdie?
I know. So he also, because he was a little thick in the midsection, he's the reason why men today leave the bottom button on their coats and jackets undone and unbutton them when they sit down.
Stop. I've always wondered about that.
Yep. He is the reason, because he couldn't button the bottom button and he just would unbutton it when he sat down, and everyone thought it was like they had to do what he did. So that's why they do that.
Damn. What amazing. A trendsetter.
I know, he really was. So Bertie continued his party boy attitude and many affairs throughout his reign. He allegedly smoked 20 cigarettes and 12 cigars a day, which is disgusting. Ugh. Like, that's just atrocious.
Oh my God.
Like,
I can't imagine the smell.
The smell. And at this time, like, already the smells. And on top of, he probably had, like, a bunch of things happening in his nether region. Yes. That didn't smell great.
You know it.
Yeah. So, he also had what's called a rodent ulcer, which...
I don't like this already.
It's terrible. It affects the skin near your nose. So it's a form of cancer. And that was treated with old school cancer treatments with radium in 1907. I know. His health started to really decline. He also had bronchitis. And then while he was on a state visit to Berlin, he had like several fainting spells. So people were getting like very concerned. And he at this point is already well past like the life expectancy. Like everyone thought he was going to die like really early just because of he was like partying all the time and like doing drugs and like opium with sex workers and like fucking everybody. Like he should have died from an STD.
So how old is he now? Like 40?
In 1907, and he was born in 1841.
Oh, so he's like, he's up there.
Yeah. So, but this
he's like in his 50s.
Yeah. So he, that's math, right? Yeah. 50, 60. I don't know.
Write us, tweet us, tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah. I don't fucking care. So he also, then he had to go after Berlin, he had to go to France, and he collapsed in France and decided to stay there for a little while, which became like a really big deal because at the time things with England and France were like not very good. So people were really mad that he was staying in France because they hadn't like told anybody about his health issues. And he did return to Buckingham Palace on May 6th. I think this is 1907 still. He had several heart attacks.
Because one just isn't enough.
He had several heart attacks, and the doctors were like, you need to, like, lie down. And he said he refused to go to bed, saying, no, I shall not give in. I shall go on. I shall work to the end. Which is real, like, okay, I appreciate your work ethic. But his health was in rapid decline, and while on his deathbed, this is like the best death by conversation I think maybe I've ever heard. So his son, Prince of Wales, who later became King George V, told Bertie that his horse, Witch of the Air, which is a great name, won at the races. And Bertie says, yes, I have heard of it. I am very glad. And then he died.
This dude is awesome.
I know. He's great. So despite being like a total fuck up in his early years and what we would probably classify as a sex addict, he actually was a really successful king.
That's
He was lauded as a peacemaker because he was so accepting of people. He fought for the rights of Native Indians in England and fought for them because at the time there was like a lot of brutality against Native Indians in England from British officials. And he was like, he basically was like, the color of your skin doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to be a dick. I think his sex life actually had something to do with like how accepting he was of others, because he was just like, free love. He was like, I don't care what you're into. Just like, be cool.
Just like, you know? Whip your bits out. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think he ever really did it in public. So, like, that's good. He's not a sex offender, you know? So there's obviously, like, a ton more about this fucking guy. And there's a really great book called The Heir Apparent, A Life of Edward VII, The Playboy Prince by Jane Ridley that you can read. I will link to it if you would like to purchase it. It's a great book. And it's fascinating because there's so much about his life that I like couldn't even cover.
So did he like, was he like an equal opportunity fuck boy? Like, did he bone down with dudes?
So I don't know, but I feel like maybe.
I mean, he seems like the type that would be like, I don't give a damn. Who cares?
Yeah. I think he was just like, YOLO, I'm horny as hell and love is love. So I don't know if he did, but I'm in my brain space, I'm like, he did.
I agree with you. I can get behind that just from the bit of story that you've told me. I feel like he probably boned down with some dudes at some point.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of like old timey folk did.
Who cares?
Yeah. Everyone was so much more accepting. But yeah.
What a great character.
I know. And he actually was like a good dude for the most part.
Who knew? See, I know. You're not all super sexually repressed. You can get some shit done. You're like a happier individual. Look at how happy that dude was.
He was so happy. And it proves, like, you don't have to be great at school to be successful.
Yeah.
Stop putting so much pressure on yourself.
No. Get some life experiences. Get some strange. You never know where it may lead. It could lead down a dark, scary path. Or it could not.
Or it could not. Just be safe. Use condoms. Use birth control. As my dad's best friend once told me, be smart about being stupid.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
I know. It's the best advice I've ever gotten.
They didn't even have those things back then.
They didn't have those things. Hence why he had like a million illegitimate kids.
Oh my gosh. What a fucking fun guy, though. I bet those parties were fucking lit.
My God. I just picture, and I know this is like not the same period of time, but I picture like in the Marie Antoinette movie, like all those card parties that they had and like just champagne fountains and like all kinds of crazy shit. Like that's what I pictured.
Lots of candlelight, dark corners.
Candles. Yes.
So much fanciness.
Yes. Wigs.
Lots of small cakes.
Tiny cakes and big wigs.
Ugh.
And that's the title of our fourth book.
We have great book ideas in every episode.
We are so busy.
We're so, so busy. We have a lot of projects, a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, we need a project manager.
We really do. I mean, we've got this whole Bruce Springsteen tour coming up, and you know we're talking talks with HBO, as in we're talking to them through this podcast.
All right.
Very busy ladies.
I know. How do we find the time?
I mean, how did Dirty Birdie find the time is the question. Who has the time?
I know. I'm like tired all the time. I can't imagine with the amount of sex he was having and being like a ruler of a country.
Oh, I'm tired enough with like one regular ass job and one partner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fucking tired.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
I guess all that like not giving a fuck probably takes a lot of weight off.
Probably. He was just like, whatever.
He just gave no fucks, and I can get on board with that.
Well, he gave all the fucks, but
he gave. Well, we don't know if he was a giver.
True. True.
We don't know that.
Judging by the chair, I'm gonna say no.
I'm gonna say recipient.
Recipient. Yeah, he was kind of a lazy sex dude.
Yeah.
Which is fine, I guess.
I mean, if we're getting consent, people are getting paid. That's what matters.
Well, and like nobody died from that. So.
Except for him? Question mark?
But we don't know. Probably from all the cigars and cigarettes.
Yeah, that was probably... He probably didn't have a great diet either, because have you...
Oh, no, he didn't. He loved Yorkshire pudding and ate it every single day.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in British cuisine that's, like, not great for the old ticker.
Right.
Like, so much butter.
You just offended, like, all of England. So.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, England. But as a fan of the Great British Baking Show, whenever they do historical...
I was watching earlier.
Wonderful.
And they did a Tudors episode.
The Tudor episodes, I'm always like, what is happening?
There was a peacock pastry with different layers of flavored cake with blueberry surprise that pie... flew out of the middle when they opened it.
Every time they do like a savory pie on that show, it's just very distressing to me, the amount of like butter, and then we're putting in fucking meat, and then we're putting in fat. It's distressing to me.
That's just all I want is like a nice savory pie.
I mean, I'm not mad at it. It's just while they're making it, it's very distressing. And then there's like meat layers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gotta layer your meat.
You gotta have some definitive meat layers. And it's just like, holy shit. These poor people.
When I was on bed rest after my surgery, all I wanted to eat was mac and cheese and pot pies, and which was good because it helped me like gain some of my weight back. But you get real sick of it after like 3 days of consecutive pot pies and mac and cheese. I was like, I can't
do this.
My mouth just felt like pastry.
My mouth is now 70% butter, and I need something else here.
Yeah, it was a lot. I was like, I need like a vegetable.
Yeah, just a couple. We'll get back to all of that fun, like lard and shit tomorrow. But just like can we pause and have like some spinach for a minute? Well. Yeah. Your Dirty Birdie story actually has many overlaps with my story about famous French post-impressionistic painter Henri Toulouse-Lautrec. Yes!
Henri visited the brothel that my dude went to.
I wanted to call it out when you were saying it, and I was like, I bet these dudes, like, Eiffel Tower high-fived each other.
Maybe they did. Point.
Yes.
Maybe they did.
I'm gonna go on record on this podcast as saying they definitely Eiffel Tower high-fived each other.
I feel like, yes, you're correct.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm so excited.
I love this period in history, the turn of the century, and this dude is just like, oh, what a fantastic, fun example of the drinking and carousing Belle Époque lifestyle. Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic. So, Henri Marie Raymond de Toulouse-Lautrec Montfa, that's his full official title, was born in 1864 in the mid-Pyrenees region of France and was the firstborn son to these aristocrats, one of which who was the Count Alphonse de Toulouse-Lautrec on all the fun names. And his mama and daddy, little baby Henri, his mama and daddy, first cousins. Yeah, boy.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, it was fine. It was fine back then.
Oofa, loofa. So mom and dad were first cousins. His dad was also like a real big jerk and piece of shit, really abusive to him and pretty much removed from Henri's entire life. So when Henri was about 4, they had another kid, who died after about a year. And so his mom was so depressed and traumatized after this, they split up. His parents split up, and his dad went and like did his thing, and his mom went and moved to Paris. So, Henri went to live in Paris with his mom when he was about 7-ish, 8-ish, and they noticed that he had a real deft hand at like sketching and drawing in his little like schoolwork books, which I think is just adorable. And they started
leather bound, like it's tied together.
Like, you know, it was in a little satchel. Oh,
that's
so cute. So they started him on like he was getting formal art lessons then. But since his family was very inbred, like generations of just people. Oh, hey. Hey, girl.
Hey, y'all, chill.
Hey, Sora.
Come lay down. It's just the garbage man. Come here.
I know, but it could be somebody bad.
It's not anybody bad. Go lay down. Don't eat your sister's face.
No, don't do that. That's not nice.
Okay, sorry. Continue.
Oh, that's okay. Where did I leave off? Oh, inbreeding. Welcome to the inbreeding section of this fucking guy. So poor little BB, Henri, because his family was so inbred for so many generations, he had several congenital health conditions and was very, very ill as a child.
So he spent a lot of time bedridden, and he would like draw and sketch and shit while he was stuck in bed with his little sick little body.
Good use of that time.
Yeah, he's like, a lot of that stuff didn't survive to this day, but he did it, and he loved it.
It's not like they had Netflix back then, you know?
No, God, they had to be so fucking bored. All of his little congenital health conditions, like, made him really, like, weak and fragile and frail. And by the age of 14, he had broken both femurs, which then, like, stunted his leg growth for, like, the rest of his life. So they said that, and as an adult, he had, like, the torso of, like, a regular adult man, but then, like, the legs of, like, a child. So into his, like, late teenage years, adult life, the reports vary between from, like, 4'8 to, like, 5 feet tall. But he was a petite man.
He was, like, your size.
Yeah, he was, like, my size. But his legs were so fucked up that he had to walk with a cane. So, you know, he couldn't really, like, do a lot of physical activities and stuff, like, as a kid or as a teen. So he really just, like, immersed himself in art. And then in 1882, when he was 18, he moved to Paris officially, where he studied art under these two painters, Léon Bonnet, who was a portrait painter, and Fernand Cormon, who also taught Van Gogh. So,
what?
I know, it's crazy town. So, like, Henri and Van Gogh were, like, super close homies.
That is so cool.
I know. It's crazy. So, in 1883...
Was he there for the ear incident?
Yes, he was alive for Van Gogh's suicide. Crazy. So, the next year, in 1883, Lautrec had his first romantic liaison with Marie Charlet, a 17-year-old model, the first of many model affairs he would have over his life. So during this time where he was in Paris and he was, like, learning about art and, like, learning from these, like, amazing artists, he became really drawn to this really working class, poor district of Paris called Montmartre. And it's really famous for its, like, very bohemian lifestyle. Like, that's where all that started.
Moulin Rouge.
Yes, exactly. And, like, artists and writers and philosophers and all brothels and all this wild shit was all going on, like, right in this one little neighborhood. So lots of shit popping off all the time. And so he moved from Paris to Montmartre in 1884 and stayed there for, like, the rest of his life. Like, that was his area. So, after he moved to Montmartre, he met a composer who also owned a cabaret called the Mirlitons, and he started creating illustrations for this composer for his songs, and this led to him being published in a magazine, and then this is where he started getting his first commissions.
Yes.
So, about in this time, Henri, you know, he was living in Paris, he was studying art, and he was enjoying all this newfound independence and freedom from his mom, who had been, like, really overprotective of him because he was so, like, sickly and frail.
Right.
And so this is where Henri really gets into Parisian nightlife. He spent most of his mornings painting and then most of his nights drinking and kicking it at nightclubs. And
life.
Oh, just really, like, mixing it up with all the, like, artists and prostitutes and writers and all these crazy people who were around at that time. He got very into drinking, as one does. So he started off, like, being a beer and wine drinker and then really graduated to being straight to hard liquor and absinthe. Like, that was his go-to.
Sure, sort of not like that.
I was like, what the fuck?
I've had absinthe one time, and I literally vomited immediately.
Yeah, it seems like a lot.
And that's like old absinthe.
Yeah. It seems like a terrible idea. And he was hitting it hard. Like, that was the go-to drink. So he...
No.
So, like I said, he had to walk with a cane because his legs were so fucked up. So the top part of his cane was hollowed out to fit a flask inside of so that
he
literally had liquor with him all of the time.
That is amazing and genius.
So smart. What a smart dude. He's got a cane all the time. What do I need to put in the cane? And put some booze in there. Genius.
It was like so full of absinthe.
Just a cane full of getting fucked up. So he, in 1887, he officially finished his studies under his painting professors. I don't know what you call them. And he, sure, why not? He finished his tutelage.
Yes.
Just because I need a reason to use that word.
Love it.
So he, then he participated in his first art exhibition under a pseudonym. Because he didn't want anyone to know that he was from this, like, aristocratic family. He wanted to be, like, under the radar.
He wanted to be like, I'm a poor artist.
Exactly. He wanted to, like, reflect the lives of the people that he was living with. So that's why, like, most of the subjects in his paintings are, like, prostitutes or poor working class people. Because those are the people that he could identify with because he was so, like, scorned by his dad and, like, aristocratic society for essentially being a dwarf. And they fucking hated him and were like, go away. So he was, like, kicking it with all the misfits in the Montmartre. So, he had been taught by his professors, tutors, whatever. We haven't decided what to call them yet. This really, like, very photorealistic, very, like, life art kind of style. And, but around the time he had, you know, met Degas and, like, Manet and all these other guys and, like, Van Gogh. And so really got into the impressionistic approach around this time, like, right after he finished all of his, like, learnings. So let's see. Now we're gonna get into some of the fun, crazy bits. oh, I forgot to tell you this one fun quote. So about his, like, love of alcohol, he once quipped that he could get falling down drunk without harm being so close to the floor. The best. It's the best. So when he was 24, he met a model named Suzanne, who was the daughter of a washerwoman. She was also a noted flirt, manipulative, and a heartbreaker.
Oh, of course.
So she was a model at the time, and she was hanging around with all these other painters. She, of course, slept with them all. So, like, she boned down with, like, Renoir and Degas.
Yeah, girl.
You're 17. You're running around. I mean, you're not 17. She was, like, in her 20s, too. But you're, like, running around Paris as a model for all these, like, amazing painters. Yeah, like, get that dick. Why not?
And, like, you're going to be in a painting.
Yeah. You're going to be in a painting that's going to be a fucking museum hundreds of years from now. Get it. During her relationship with Henri, however, because he was aristocrat and came from, like, a very wealthy family, she tried to pretend that her infant son was from her affair with Henri, even though the child existed before they met.
Oh, my God.
And then when Henri found out that she had been mocking him behind his back and he left her, she faked a suicide to try and get him to marry her.
Oh, my God. What a psychopath.
So he was really just all up in it. So the next year, in 1889, the Moulin Rouge opens and the Association of Toulouse-Lautrec and the world-famous cabaret just becomes the stuff of legend. So he was commissioned to create a series of posters for the venue when it opened. And then from there on, like, he was their go-to illustrator. He did all of their artwork. He had a reserved seat at the club every night.
Incredible.
And was usually like drinking and sketching all night long while at the Moulin Rouge.
He's like live tweeting.
Yeah, he's essentially live tweeting what's going down at the Moulin Rouge. So over the next 7 to 8-ish years, he created over 30 paintings of the Moulin Rouge and its regulars.
Oh, God.
So just super huge influence on his work, like capturing like the energy and the vibrancy and all the craziness that was going on in the Moulin Rouge on the rig. So this is where Toulouse-Lautrec's drinking really kind of like takes a turn into crazy town territory. So due to his enthusiasm for drinking, cabarets, prostitutes, and having outcast friends like Van Gogh, who was like very much a social outcast, like nobody gave a fuck about Van Gogh while he was alive. And then these like anarchist writers, a close friend of Toulouse-Lautrec's, who was also an artist named Francois Gauzy, commented, quote, Lautrec is seen only as a midget, a drunken, vice-ridden court jester whose friends are pimps and girls from brothels.
It's rude, but also he's like living his best life.
Yeah, like let him live. And he's like the only person who captured this part, like this vibrant part of Paris culture at this time. Like everybody else, like this is so base and disgusting and vile. No one else gave a shit.
Yeah, and he's like, no, this is the best, and you're going to wish that it was still around.
Right. It's amazing. So another painter, Edouard Bouyald, said that while Toulouse-Lautrec did engage in sex with prostitutes, the real reason for his behavior were moral ones. Lautrec was too proud to submit to his lot. As a physical freak, an aristocrat cut off from his kind by his grotesque appearance, he found an affinity between his own condition and the moral penury of the prostitute. Ah. So he really, like, saw himself very much as an outcast and, like, wanted to live around other people that he felt like got him. So dude was carousing all night, getting it with prostitutes, blah, blah, blah. So remember earlier when I was talking about Toulouse-Lautrec's many physical conditions?
Uh-oh.
Here's a fun fact. He is reported to have hypertrophied genitals, which means the increase in volume of an organ or tissue due to the enlargement of its component cells.
What?
And to verify this,
oh no,
the prostitutes of the Montmartre knew him as, quote, the tripod.
No!
Yes. So, already had it going on.
You know what? Good for him.
Good
for him.
Dude was making paintings, living crazy life, laying pipe, like just really living it up in turn of the century Paris.
That is wow.
Yeah. He was a fun guy. For a hot minute there,
I would hang out with him.
I'd hang out with him right fucking now. He sounds awesome.
I don't want to do shots of absinthe, but if he told me, hey, do some absinthe, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I'd be down for it. It's probably going to lead to a super fun night. You don't know where you're going to end up, but it's probably going to be fun as shit.
Probably at the Moulin Rouge.
Yeah,
Pumpkin glitter and drinking champagne and having the time of your life.
Doing high kicks, having a great evening.
Swinging on trapeze stuff.
There was all kinds of nuttiness going on there.
Wearing a top hat.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. Yes to lady top hats. 100%. So in 1894, he is now 30. On a whim, he decided to move into one of the brothels he frequented.
Sure.
And live there. So he did that.
I mean, if he was going there, like, every day anyway, you might as well move in.
He was basically living there probably anyways. So one of his favorites at the brothel was a prostitute named Rosa LaRouge. She was a red-haired prostitute who can be seen in like many of his later works. Like most of his prominent later works like feature a redhead. And she is infamously noted as the one to have given him syphilis.
Oh, no. Wait, is this the one that Nicole Kidman's character is based off of in Moulin Rouge, the movie?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. That's a great question. I don't know. But during this period that Henri lived at the brothel, he is quoted to have said during this time, "I have never felt more at home."
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know. Just so sad. So, alcohol, the late night carousing, his shitty health, all of this kind of comes to a head a couple years later in 1896. He's like straight up crazy alcoholic at this point. And in 1897, he even had an attack of delirium tremens during a summer vacation. So in case our listeners don't know what the DTs are, they are severe form of alcohol withdrawal. Like they can, you can, it's very, very serious. You could die.
Our boy Mango died from that.
From DTs?
Yep.
Damn. It's fucking crazy. It's very dangerous. Prison.
You like hallucinate, you do all kinds of crazy shit.
Mm-hmm. So, this is kind of leading up into his last few years. So because of the syphilis and the alcoholism, his last few years were just like terrible, like paranoia, just really, really shitty, awful, like madness and freaking out. He was even committed to a sanatorium in 1899 from the effects of his alcoholism and syphilis and his deteriorating health. And so after several months there, he was released with the strict advice that he should never return to the Montmartre, which is the place that he loved and spent most of his adult life. So he went to live in Bordeaux in this house that his mother owned. But his sobriety didn't last long. He was back to drinking in 10 months, hiding alcohol in his cane again, just really hitting that bottle real hard. By the next year, 1900, he was noted to have been suffering deep bouts of depression, anxiety, and paranoid obsessions. And then by the next year, in early 1901, he had a stroke that paralyzed both of his legs. And then like a few months later, had another stroke that left one whole side of his body paralyzed. So in this time, really, he was like, couldn't really paint, couldn't create anything. And he went back to his, estate that his mother owned, to basically be on his deathbed. So his mother and a few friends came and visited him while he was on his deathbed, and his father, who barely like ever made an appearance in his entire life, came. Good old Count Alphonse showed up at his bedside, and everyone was
what
like,
"What the fuck did he want?"
Exactly. Everyone's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" And Henri is quoted to have said, "Good papa, I knew you wouldn't miss the kill." And he passed away on September 9th at the age of 36.
Oh my God.
Talk about some, we've had some good deathbed quotes on this episode. Really killer ones.
That, oh wow, I knew you wouldn't miss the kill. That's so fucked up.
Yeah, his dad was a piece of shit. But
that's terrible. How messed up do you have to be to like wait until your kid is dying when it's an adult, or even not, just in general, just not be there and be like, I'm gonna show up at your last act.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, just like fuck off somewhere. Go away. Go away from here.
Ugh.
But like the legacy this motherfucker leaves behind is astounding. So his mother, he was well known in like Paris when he was alive and in like certain circles, but he wasn't really known at like as like a fine artist or renowned or anything like that. And his mother really like took his legacy and ran with it. Like she opened a museum for all his paintings and like really like pushed his name while she was still alive. But in his less than 20-year career, he created 773 canvas paintings, 275 watercolors, 363 prints and posters, and over 5,000 drawings.
Oh, he was, my God.
Prolific.
That's like a little art factory.
Yeah, he was just making shit all the time, and he got really into like lithography and printing and shit, and like really like pushed that forward as an art form. We didn't really get into all the shit that he did as an artist because here again, we ain't trying to talk about that.
It's not that podcast.
It's not that story. But he really like pushed forward such cool like art forms and push forward impressionistic painting into this really like illustrative style. Like most paintings at the time didn't have these like hard edge lines, and he did that. He brought that in and like gave things hard edge lines and like crazy lighting and like infused things with like movement and energy. Oh, just such a fucking crazy cool dude.
He sounds like so much fun. Could you imagine our two guys together hanging out?
That would be the party of all parties.
It would be the best night.
That would be so much fun. They probably hung out.
They had to have hung out.
They had to.
I won't accept anything else.
I won't. I'm going with my earlier Eiffel Tower hypothesis.
Yeah. 1,000%.
I mean, like, your dude would probably have to, like, bring his hand down, you know, yeah. So it probably wouldn't be as Eiffel Tower-y. Well,
but he probably would be, like, laying down anyway because he's a lazy fuck.
That's true. It was a reach up. Boom.
Boom.
I like that. I like that. Your dude's laying down in a sex chair. There's a lady. There's Henri. We do a little high five.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Love it. That will never list it.
Never list it. I didn't know, like, any of that about him.
Because he's a super interesting dude. And go look at his artwork. If you haven't seen his artwork, listeners, look that shit up. It's amazing. It's so vibrant and colorful. It's beautiful. So different than anything else that was being made at the time. Just a super badass.
I love him.
Like, just really, like, made his own way in life.
Yeah, like, oh, you don't like me because I'm short? Fuck you. I'm gonna go hang out with all these prostitutes with my big tripod dick and make some paintings.
Live my life.
Drink absinthe out of my cane. What the fuck?
Yeah.
That I can't get over.
It's the best. It's the best detail.
I'm trying to think of like an accessory that I use on a regular basis that like I could transform into a flask. They have flask bracelets, but they look wildly uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're gigantic. I'm like, everyone knows that that's a flask, because that's an insane looking bracelet.
Maybe I should start using a cane for fashion.
I see nothing wrong with this.
For fashion and for alcohol.
And for twirling.
For twirling.
Of course. It could also be a great defensive weapon.
Yeah, exactly. It's really ticking all of the boxes. Do you think his cane was bedazzled?
Ooh, good question. Like good question.
Like with some kind of like animal head at the top with like rhinestones all over it.
Oh, yes. You know what? I bet it was very ornate. He seems like a very fashionable fellow.
I bet he had so many like silks and like red capes and
I do know that he had a lot of like custom made suits because he was a man of a very definitive stature. He was also a man of some means. So he had some pretty killer suits.
I bet he wore a lot of purple too.
Yes, there's no color photography, which is a real bummer, but I bet it was a very vibrant wardrobe.
Like Dumbledore's robe status.
Yes. Like lots of dark but vibrant, like jewel tones.
Yes.
A million jewel tones. I can get on board with this, absolutely.
With like gold thread.
Yes. Oh, I bet it was gorgeous.
Fashion sucks now.
I know. It's not nearly as fun. Especially with all the 90s shit coming back in. I'm not for it.
No, I'm not for it either. I would much rather wear, like, a gold or purple, I don't know, robe.
Yeah. Give me a three-piece suit.
I really wish I lived in a world where I could wear the suits that Blake Lively wears in A Simple Favor.
Do it. Do it.
It's just so fancy.
It's so fancy and it's so badass. You should do it.
Maybe I should.
I've always said you really just need to get all of Zelda's wardrobe from the Magicians.
Oh my God, I know. I'm obsessed with her.
Oh, just the big pants? God damn it, those would look so good on you.
I love a big pant.
Whew, just a high-waisted, large, a wide-legged pant? Girl.
Yes.
Don't even get me started.
I mean, that's my dream.
Ugh. Well, we've really gotten into some sexcapades today. We've really gotten into some great deathbed quotes today. We really covered a lot of ground.
I love that we told similar stories and didn't even know.
No.
Like, our friendship is at that level of telepathy, which I love so much.
That was a very fun little, like, bit of kismet.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. Well, I love you, friend.
I love you, friend.
Be your own fucking guy.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll be back. Don't forget to follow us on our social channels.
Mm-hmm. Do that.
Look for us on Spotify and the Apples.
Whenever wherever you're listening to this now.
Yeah, wherever you listen to your podcast, keep doing it.
The thing is, you have options.
You have options. We're not here to tell you how to listen.
No. We're not here to tell you how to live your life.
Yeah, that's basically the moral of this podcast, right? Like, be your own fucking guy. L your L.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do your own dizzle.
Hi, Alex. Hi to everyone else listening to you, but mostly Alex.
But mostly hi to Alex. We should have an Alex shout out every episode.
Every episode. Every single one.
Hi, Alex. We miss you.
We miss you. And Judd, too, I guess.
Yeah, Judd. Yeah, you're in there. JK, Judd. We love you so much.
Yeah, we love all you guys so much. Spread the news about this. We're going to start a Patreon page, too, so that we can get support for things like it costs money to host a podcast on the internet. So, and we don't have money.
No, I just quit my job.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't even have ads yet, and Carmen quit her job. So
that's how really invested going. I am in this.
Yeah, we're really all in on this podcast.
Putting all my eggs in the podcast basket, baby.
It better work. This is
better work. You fuckers out there better tell your friends.
Tell your friends, share it. Send us your suggestions, or like if there's a historical figure that you want to tell us about that we can then tell the story to each other and then into your ear holes, let us know.
So down.
Is there some crazy motherfucker in your family that you would like to share a story of?
We all got him.
We all got him. Tell us about your fucking guy.